Welcome, paleo dieters and boneheads one and all, to episode 89 of the Nerdstravaganza podcast, where all the flora and fauna are mega. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
And in this episode, we'll discuss the role of prehistory in works of fiction, specifically prehistory as it pertains to those cuddly critters known as dinosaurs. But before we spend some time with our reptilian friends, let's kick things off with our weekly geekly update. Brian, what's been up in your week?
Spent a little bit of time getting ready for our, pre-inaugural game night at the Stranahan House Historic Museum. That's kind of exciting to me. I'm pretty happy to be taking that on the road, so to speak.
Yes, we will be hosting a gaming night at the nearby Stranahan House, which I believe is the oldest standing house in our fair city of Fort Lauderdale, if I'm not mistaken.
Because of that Tri-Rail thing, I am freshly versed on the pitch. It is the oldest surviving house, which I find a little macabre.
Well, there you go. It has managed to withstand the forces of nature and man, which conspire to destroy all houses in our city.
And other than that, I ordered these really cool stamps for... you're familiar with green stuff, correct, Tom?
I am.
Well, you can basically get it kind of sort of half dry and then use these things to stamp patterns in it. Makes it look like cool like roads or cobblestones for miniature bases. So I'm going to be trying those out soon. Kind of excited about that.
And green stuff, keep me honest here, Brian, is that sort of sculpting, molding material used primarily for miniature modeling.
Yeah, primarily for like hobbying. I'm sure, you know, railroad enthusiasts use it too and stuff like that. Landscaping miniatures, however you want to go.
So you're going to be stamping some cobblestone patterns and such on it?
The two I bought, there's like 30 of these available, but the two I bought were like deck of the ship, like wood planks and knots and cool things. And this really neat like temple ground pattern. I have some paladins in need of some bases, so I thought that'd be good for them.
Sounds killer, man. We should have thought of that. Why don't we think of these cool inventions?
I really don't know. That's usually the first thing anyone says when they hear about these things. A stamp. Why didn't I think of that?
Right.
These are pretty killer too, because it's not just like one stamp, you know, like a perfectly sized stamp that you pop down. It's this huge brick, and you can actually choose like different areas of it. That way, it keeps a little bit of variance in your bases.
Hmm.
These are well done.
Really cool, man.
They're all the rage.
Sounds like it.
And what about you, Tom? What have you been up to?
Not a lot. Just playing me some video games. Started Tearaway on the PS Vita, and that game's really cool. I have to force myself to put it down. It's one of those type of games. I am enjoying my new PS Vita system, and Tearaway is making me enjoy it. And doing a little bit of reading, a little bit of gaming with the Dragon's Crown, and basically, yeah, just mentally preparing myself for our first ever gaming night at the Stranahan House. I'm looking most forward to that. I will say that joining us at our first ever game night will be none other than Brian Dalrymple, the owner of one of our favorite gaming haunts, the Adventure Game Store. So I'm kind of excited to have him there. I think if he enjoys it, we know we've done something right.
Here's hoping.
Right. But I think that pretty much sums it up. Nothing too crazy besides a little bit of gaming, a little bit of reading, and some prepping. Well, I guess with our recent past out of the way, we can consider the ancient past. Specifically, the prehistoric past. Which is unique in that there's no history, so we don't know what humans were doing for the times we suspect humans were around during prehistory, meaning before we wrote things down. And then there are certainly large swaths of prehistory where we know for a certainty that there were no humans around because we had not evolved into the oh-so-enlightened form in which we find ourselves today. If our progenitors existed, they were furry little critters hiding in the trees as the masters of the Earth, known as dinosaurs, stomped around ruling the Earth. So when we consider prehistory, Brian, I think what we wanted to do in this episode was discuss how it ties into fiction or how it motivates fiction or how it's woven into fictional stories and kind of ways in which it seems like people who want to give prehistory a fictional treatment are sort of limited in their options. And maybe we can come up with some crazy new ways to have a prehistoric setting. So let's motivate discussion, I guess, by discussing some of our favorite prehistoric or BC, if you will, in the traditional Stone Age sense, games, movies, etc. Any come to mind for you?
I think dinosaurs, and I think that horrible movie that I can never remember the name of that I've talked about 100 times before, where they bring the T-Rex back to try to make it like a pet.
Jurassic Park 3?
Something like that.
If I were to mention like dinosaur in terms of fiction, your mind would go to bringing them into our world, kind of, or would that be your first instinct? Or
yeah, I think instead of thinking like as an era or as a setting, I think of them as like almost like the villain. Like, you know, you can have a story in today and a dinosaur is like almost more believable than like a dragon or like a wizard or something like that.
Right, a dinosaur is believable, but as a villain, dinosaurs are cast as these monsters and these villains, but in fact, what we were talking about was animals, right? I mean, at the end of the day, they were animals driven by instinct, you would assume. They weren't malicious, so to ascribe to them these sort of elemental evil properties, I think, is unfair.
I guess they'd be kind of cumbersome. I mean, you know, they're fairly large.
Right. These gigantic animals on the rampage.
They might be awkward.
It would definitely be awkward. And I think, so you hit on one of the main ways in which dinosaurs are sort of woven into narrative. There's really only three ways to weave humans into a prehistoric setting. One is with a time travel sort of gimmick. The second is to sort of anthropomorphize the dinosaurs and make them like talking. So make them into something they never were. And that usually leads to zaniness and goofiness, in my opinion. And then the third is the one you touched on, which is tampering with the divine timeline by bringing these creatures into our timeline, you know, where they don't belong and where they will necessarily conflict with us. And in those settings, you have to wonder if they're more of a commentary on humanity because, you know, we're the absolute worst at coexisting with other creatures, right?
Yeah, and ourselves.
Yeah, exactly. So to touch on that a little, there are obviously some very notable examples. Did you mention Jurassic Park in your first two? Or?
No, I was trying to avoid that.
Yeah, so Jurassic Park is the velociraptor in the room. No, wait, that's not enough. It's the... What's a gigantic dinosaur?
Diplodocus.
There you go. In the room. Here you have these brilliant scientists figuring out a way to clone these creatures and bring them into our time. And of course, that never works out well because nature finds a way. And really, it's a whole thing about man playing God and being punished for it, isn't it?
Yeah.
I think Jeff Goldblum worshipped chaos and chaos didn't like us trying to establish order where there shouldn't be order or introducing something that didn't belong in the current order. I don't remember. What was his main objection?
Yeah, his thing was that chaos theory said basically everything would go to hell eventually.
Well, by his own theory, then, what's the problem with just throwing a few dinosaurs in the mix?
Well, they would get out of hand and learn to reproduce and blah, blah, blah. You know, they can't be controlled. So this idyllic theme park setting couldn't last. Now, speaking of obscure scientific theories, I would like to take a moment, if I may, and point out that I'm a huge fan of string theory.
Mm.
And string theory says that there's probably a reality somewhere where that worked out perfectly and dinosaurs became domesticated and kids are like now riding T-Rexes. Like with a little saddle, like for pictures and everything.
So you're talking an alternate universe where Jurassic Park was a reality and that all worked out, or?
Yeah, and it just worked out great instead of going to hell.
I like it. Yeah, yeah. So an alternate reality where it actually is possible to find ancient DNA in amber of dinosaurs, in spite of the fact that they've been gone for like way too long for that to be the case.
Killjoy.
Well, okay, but in that reality, maybe the dinosaurs didn't die out that long ago. They were around up to the time that we normally associate with the giant mammals. To me, they died off recently, and then humans rose. I don't really know how that could happen from an evolutionary standpoint, but I'm hardly an evolutionary biologist, so why not? I wouldn't mind having a cute little domesticated dinosaur. But you know what? They would be like dogs. They would be like lap dogs. They, you know, they would have lost all their fierceness, you know?
Right. They just like carry you around the little circle, like loosely tied to that stake in the middle.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, you got Jurassic Park. Jurassic Park is a great example of bringing these extinct creatures into our modern times. There was another movie from the 80s, I think, called Iceman, where this caveman was thawed out and basically put into an enclosure where he was studied. And, of course, in spite of the fact that they tried to isolate him, he ended up interacting with the real world. And, of course, he was found to be incompatible with the real world. But I believe that movie did a pretty good job of having his humanity come through and not having him depicted as just like a ooga booga, like Joe and Mac style caveman from that old Super NES series. But there again, you know, I guess when they found this like ancient man frozen, they should have just left him frozen. Because if I was found 40,000 years from now frozen, I wouldn't want them to resurrect me and like introduce me to the awesome new world. I'd want to just be dead.
Speaking of alternate realities, you could be resurrected in a certain town in California, learn how to party your way through high school, and enjoy Magic Mountain, the theme park.
Whoa, man. Would they make a movie named after me?
They might.
Oh, man. What would it be called? Like, would it be named after a city, maybe, or something? Or?
You'd be like Broadway Man.
Broadway Man, or like Los Angeles Man, or something along those lines. You were, of course, referring to
Encino Man.
Yes.
I'm actually a sucker for Pauly Shore movies, so I will inject them into the conversation whenever I can.
You know, I have to confess, if I've seen Encino Man, I don't remember it. Good movie, though. Funny.
The caveman learned how to play, God, was it Rad Racer? It was one of those Sega arcade games, not Rad Racer.
Outrun?
Maybe.
Afterburner, Outrun, the motorcycle game.
No, it was a racing game for sure. It was probably Outrun.
Yeah, cool.
He got really good at Outrun.
So he was able to adapt to the modern time. He wasn't just a troglodyte.
He had some problems, you know. It was a high school allegory, so he had to do his little puberty thing. But he turned into a strong, productive member of society.
Nice, I like it. Also continuing this theme, I would point out, though, that there are instances where species that are thought to be extinct are, in fact, extant in our modern time, and we find them on these isolated islands and meddle with them to our great undoing. For example, well, there's Baby, which for some reason has been on my mind a lot since our kaiju episode, where I don't think it brings about the destruction of mankind, but finding this little brontosaurus, I understand that taxonomically speaking, there's no such thing as a brontosaurus anymore, but let me run with this one. Bringing this baby brontosaurus out of her habitat turned out not to be good for her or for the human condition, if I recall.
I seem to recall also that didn't they try to eat the daddy or something like that? Didn't he like poison all the tribesmen? So coexistence wasn't exactly beneficial towards humans.
Yeah, I think the moral of the story was leave the brontosauruses in their forest and maybe study them from afar, but don't interact with them. And then, of course, you had really the 800-pound gorilla.
The sauropod?
Well, no, I was going to reference King Kong, which is the best-known example of bringing a creature from another time, another era that didn't have its place in our world. Not that I know of any time when there were primates of that size wandering the earth, but still, bringing a creature like that into the heart of a major metropolis, actually, and expecting good things to result. I have to confess, I like King Kong. Well, that's really not a confession. It's good. I like the old version. I really didn't mind the redo they did a few years ago. I thought that was a really good treatment of the incompatibility being shown to be ours, right? We bring this animal out of its habitat, and then we torture it for our amusement. And then we expect it to not go
on. Dance, monkey!
Right. Right, right. And, you know, the poor creature just wants to survive, and then it happens to fixate on a particular beauty because it's lonely, you know, poor thing. So it has its own little glimmer of humanity, too, and you feel for it. Poor critter. But basically, a common thread in all these is that big animals are monsters, and we tamper with and interact with these monsters at great risk to our well-being. So that's that thread out of the way. The third one that I discussed, which was the, you know, bringing prehistory into the modern day. Now let's lighten things up for a second and talk about anthropomorphizing dinosaurs. So we can't relate to a time when humans were around. We can't relate to a time when big reptiles ruled the earth. I'm assuming dinosaurs are still reptiles. Every time I turn around, science changes, and I'm not there for the change. So let's just.
I think they're avian these days.
Oh, are they?
I believe so.
All right. So we can't fathom a time when the predecessors of modern birds ruled the earth. And we can't really relate because while they could certainly be said to have ruled the earth and that they were the dominant species, they weren't empire builders. They didn't have civilization. So we can't really relate to them. We wouldn't consider them people, you know? So the only way to relate with them on that level is to anthropomorphize them physically or to just give them cute cartoony voices. And the physical approach, I guess, could be epitomized by the old comedy show Dinosaurs, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think that was the name, just dinosaurs.
Right. And, of course, I remember from cartoons there were the Dinobots from Transformers. That was sort of a thrice-removed humanization of these creatures because they were actually robots that were modeled on dinosaurs, and the robots were kind of human-like themselves. Definitely kind of a circuitous route to get from dinosaur to man in that case. And I remember a cartoon called Dino Saucers as well, which I think involved a race of alien dinosaurs coming to Earth or something along those lines. You have any that come to mind as far as the anthropomorphizing is concerned?
I can picture one, but it may have been Dinosaucers. Dinosaucers was like the talking, like walking upright T-Rex that was kind of like a mercenary from another planet.
Yeah, he was red, and he led the bad dinosaurs, who were all red, and I think the good dinosaurs were like green and blue in color, yeah.
Okay, same one then.
Yeah, they're like space dinosaurs. Pew pew! Like, really cool. Oh, I can't believe I said the pew pew, I hate that. Ugh. But, yeah, Dinosaucers. And then, of course, there are the circumstances wherein if you don't want to physically transform the dinosaurs into upright walking kind of humanoids, you can just take the existing dinosaurs and give them human voices.
Oh, and Land of the Lost. No, wait, what was that called?
Land Before Time.
Land Before Time.
Right. Land Before Time, you draw them in a cute way and they can talk. Recently, there was that movie Walking with Dinosaurs, which I think was an adaptation of the Discovery Channel's like real documentary stuff where they just gave the dinosaurs voices. That looked cool. I wanted to see that because they didn't redo them in cartoony style or anything. They just gave human voices to these realistically depicted dinosaurs. And it was a kid's movie, so I'm sure, you know, it was funny and so on. But I never did get around to seeing that. I'll have to check it out when it comes out on a home media format of some sort.
They probably still sing.
Oh, I hope not. I hope not. And then, of course, there is the circa 2000 and something Disney movie called Dinosaur, which I think accounts for the cartoonish dinosaur in the ride at Disney World now, the Diplodon or whatever that like helps you escape at the end.
Ah, yeah.
Had like a very cute kind of almost human face. So they can retain they're sauropod features, but they have to talk and preferably sing for us to relate to them. That's another option.
Are we doing Ice Age? Because like the main characters weren't really dinosaurs, but
in Dinosaur or in?
No, I'm saying like in this.
Yes, by all means, Ice Age. Yeah, so we're talking prehistory. I'm focusing heavily on dinosaurs, but of course there were also the massive.
Everybody loves woolly mammoths.
Right. What period of time? The Eocene or something, when it was mammals ruling the Earth, giant mammals? I don't know. But anyway, go on. Yes, you were mentioning Ice Age.
Ice Age. Speaking of, you know, dinosaurs with human voices doing silly things.
They really were silly. As I recall, you had Ray Romano voicing a mammoth or mastodon. I don't remember the difference between those animals. You had his girlfriend, who was also a mammoth, right? A saber-toothed tiger.
Oh, wait. The girlfriend thought she was a she was raised by sloths, wasn't she?
Right, so she thought she was a sloth.
Actually, like, hung from trees. That was kind of cute. I liked that.
And what was the one creature, the kind of neurotic buck-toothed creature? Was he a sloth, or what was he? Not the one that chases the acorn.
The Liguizamosaur?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think he was some kind of sloth.
Yeah, okay. So you had him. Am I missing any of the characters?
Dennis Leary.
What did he play?
The saber-tooth.
Oh, yeah, tiger? The saber-tooth cat. Yeah, I did mention him. So here you had, again, creatures more or less retaining their form, but with really cutesy faces and speaking English. And I'm not really sure what else you can do. Like, can you have a story that doesn't involve people? Like, is it possible to just... Could you make a video game, say, where you were just like a little... Something along the lines of like Tokyo Jungle, but with dinosaurs, where you were just trying to survive as a dinosaur?
I didn't they do kind of... I mean, not with dinosaurs, but... I think it fits your question. Wasn't Flo... Like, just be a flower or something like that?
I do believe the concept behind Flo was... Just a flower floating on the breeze, but I've never played it, so I can't say for sure.
Yeah, I think the entire narrative was, you're a flower! So yeah, I guess it would work. You could be, you know, you're a dinosaur.
Okay. Movie-wise, though, I don't think people would be too into... The closest thing I can think of to a movie about just animals being animals, and there were still humans involved at the periphery, would be one of my favorite movies ever made, called The Bear. About a little bear cub who gets taken in by like a big male grizzly bear who helps him survive in the wild. And I guess you could do something like that with dinosaurs, but even in The Bear, you know, there were humans who were involved with the bear. He encountered them, so it wasn't solely an animal thing, I guess. Really, unless you wanted to do a sort of March of the Penguins type of documentary, what else could you really do with just dinosaurs or just, you know, woolly mammoths or something in their habitat, besides an educational film with narrated by Morgan Freeman?
Did you ever see, I think it's called Milo and Otis?
The little pug dog and the cat?
Yeah.
Yes.
If you take enough footage of them being cute, you can eventually string a narrative together.
So see, I maintain that the recent Walking with Dinosaurs movie is they took all that footage, because have you seen the Walking with Dinosaurs TV series on Discovery? It's been running for quite a few years now, I think.
Yeah, I've seen some.
It's cool. I like it. I like how they depict the dinosaurs and stuff. And what I suspect is they took a lot of that footage, or maybe that same studio said, hey, let's just do a feature based on it. But, you know, we want kids to go see it, so let's give it a story and give the dinosaurs personalities. So I really want to see that, because I want to see if my hunch about it is correct. And that'll confirm whether or not enough compiled footage can make for a narrative. So let's see. We've done two basic thrusts here. The past into the present. The dinosaurs into people, or injecting humanity into dinosaurs themselves. And now, of course, I think that leaves the real biggie. And I'll let you run with this one, Brian. Where else can we go with this?
This is alternate dimensions and time travel, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right. Somehow injecting current day humans into ancient day dinosaurs.
Right. So time travel, essentially. So you really, it's like going into the prehistoric past by means of technology. So like sci-fi is a bridge to the dinosaurian past, essentially, right?
Yeah, it's usually sci-fi. I think sometimes it's magical portal, but...
Right. Sadly, if we wanted to define a genre called prehistorical fiction, that genre could not stand on its own. It would have to have elements of fantasy or sci-fi in order for it to work. Because otherwise, there's just no way for humans to be in that setting. You know what I mean?
I was going to say this, but since you brought up genres and mixing and everything... I'll mention it now. I'm going to start writing prehistoric romance novels.
About dinosaurs?
No, it's going to be like some kind of weird, like, you know, she's the high school girl who meets the dinosaur, but he doesn't want to believe he's a dinosaur because he sparkles in the sun.
So you're just going to go with the, I guess, the really time-honored tradition of just saying, you know what, humans existed at the same time as dinosaurs and blah, blah. It's all prehistory, right?
Well, you know, she can be Neanderthal or whatever. I'll keep it realistic.
That's way more realistic. Instead of being separated by, like, you know, 1.8 million years, it's like 1.795 million years or something crazy like that. Right. So I guess the way a lot of people have squared that is, well, we want to do like dinosaur fiction. We want to do like quote unquote Stone Age fiction or BC fiction or what have you. So we'll just fudge the historical timeline and say that the Flintstones certainly is remotely plausible because dinosaurs and humans coexisted. And that's how you get things like the Flintstones. And what are other notable examples of humans just living in a world with dinosaurs? Well, and we don't have to rule out the time travel or interdimensional travel here either.
Well, one of my favorites, and I can't believe I called it the wrong thing earlier, but it was Sid and Marty Krofft, wasn't it? Land of the Lost?
Oh, yeah. So when you said Land Before, when we jumped on the Land Before Time tangent, did you mean to say Land of the Lost?
Or? I got them mixed up. I meant Land Before Time, but... my favorite Chiz title. And it's a crying shame our buddy Rick's not here to discuss this.
Was he a big fan?
The main character's name was Rick Marshall.
Oh, yikes. You know, I didn't even know that.
Yep.
I did not know much about the show. I know that they were in this land where there were dinosaurs and a bunch of hostile lizard men.
Sleesaks.
So what was the basic premise behind Land of the Lost?
They were whitewater rafting and an earthquake opened a buried waterfall. And I guess the waterfall had a portal to another world on it. I don't remember if it was supposed to be actual, like, prehistory or if it was like, you know, alternate dimension.
But nevertheless, they were in the land of the lost. Lost in the land of the lost with dinosaurs and the slee stacks or whatever they're called.
Yeah. Big scary Tyrannosauruses and little friendly. What was the sidekick in that? I don't
Some kind of remember. Like little monkey man, wasn't it?
Yeah. But there were a good, there was a race of those.
Yeah, they were called monkey men, monk men.
Monkey menites.
sure. Oh, man. I'm trying to think of any other instances where you had, of course, there was a Flintstones, there was that. What else would there be where humans and dinosaurs coexisted? And I think a lot of the Conan comics involved him living in a land with like prehistoric monsters, wasn't it?
I remember a lot of giant skeletons and things like that. So yeah, I can totally see huge reptiles. A toy that I always wanted, and never got, and never even saw. Like I didn't know a single friend who even had one of these, but, Dino Riders.
Dino Riders, which was what, dinosaurs with like laser cannons and rockets and stuff mounted on them?
Yeah, they were like mechanized dino tanks with human, I don't know, gunners, pilots. I'm not really sure how they, how deep the symbiotic relationship was.
But was it, in fact, a symbiotic relationship where the humans of this time and live side by side with the dinosaurs, or did they travel back in time and employ the dinosaurs for their warfare?
I don't remember.
We're going to edit in a quick Google lookup, which will be seamless to you, dear listeners. Okay, so we're back from our little seamless trip to Google land, and thanks to Wikipedia, our memories were jogged about Dino Riders. I remember it now, too. Of course, it involved, as we mentioned before, sci-fi as a bridge into the time of dinosaurs, and these two warring, what were they, alien races or something, Brian?
A race of humans and a faction of, like, demi-humans. I guess the bad guys can't possibly be all humans, since humans are so goody-goody.
That's true. And, of course, they made prehistoric Earth the latest battleground through some time travel mishap in their war and proceeded to weaponize dinosaurs, right?
Yeah.
I do remember the toys. The show must have been pretty short in its run because I remember it kind of being there and then being gone before I got a chance to whine about the toys.
I don't think I ever even saw the show. Like, I just remember the toys, and then I was just aware that the show existed.
Well, it looked pretty cool. But again, another case of dinosaurs being visited by people from the future. I guess what I'm wondering is why somebody hasn't created a world where humans have always been there. Like, humans and dinosaurs just exist. Like, dinosaurs are the big predator animals and what have you of that day. And humans just live on that planet in that world. It would have to be like an alternate Earth. But instead of elephants and rhinoceri, if that's the plural, and so on, you would have dinosaurs running around.
I almost want to say they must have, but you're right, I can't think of one.
It would seem like a pretty interesting story. It would make for a cool, like, cartoon or video game franchise or whatever, where the... Yeah, and we're probably missing dozens of them that just aren't coming to mind, but I think that's an interesting treatment of dinosaurs that obviously hasn't been done to great enough effect that it jumps into our mind. But be that as it may, we still have some older examples of humans coexisting with dinosaurs. Flintstones comes to mind the most clearly, and it makes me wonder whether the depressingly common misconception that man and dinosaur live side by side is responsible for shows like the Flintstones, or if shows like the Flintstones are responsible for the misconception, or at least do a lot to bolster the misconception in the popular imagination. What do you think?
No, I think the television shows convince people it's reality.
So you really think people, and I understand, I try to avoid politics, but there are obviously some people whose beliefs about the creation of the world compel them to believe that man and dinosaur coexisted. But even apart from those people, you think there are some people that just don't know so little about science and prehistory that they actually think man and dinosaur and mammoth and everything else just, like, lived at the same time?
Well, I joked about it, but I think it's totally possible. I think it's totally likely for people to think, oh, well, okay, it wasn't really us. It must have been, like, you know, Cro-Magnon. I mean, it was some kind of us. I mean...
Right, and I wonder, like, so in the absence of knowledge to the contrary, your mind doesn't allow you to conceive of a time when there weren't humans, which is why it's hard, which gets back to the original point, that it's probably hard to create fiction around a time involving no humans. You know what I mean?
To be fair, most of us can't wrap our minds around the 5,000 years of known history. You're really talking about exponentially more than that.
Right, right. So it's not a hard sell for you to implant in people's minds that, yeah, there were just cavemen around back then. They weren't like us, but they were around. I mean,
they didn't have TV.
Right, right. But they just lived in caves while the dinosaurs were wandering around. And it's baffling to me because there is a mountain of evidence to suggest that the world is so old that there were really eons that passed. I don't know if an eon translates into an actual unit of time. I'm just using that figuratively. Wherein mankind wasn't here. And we're a relatively recent arrival. So I guess you just have to not pay attention. I mean, you just have to not watch, like, the Discovery Channel to not know these things. You don't have to be a scientist to be exposed. You just have to have some curiosity in what's on cable at any given day. You know what I mean?
My opinion of people is low. I still think that's asking a lot. What's on Discovery? Something educational. Change it.
Exactly.
Right.
Okay, to sort of round things out for the episode, let's brainstorm and spitball our own dinosaur-based fiction, Brian. Let's start with the setting. I know you were kind of talking about this pre-show. What do you have in the way of a dinosaur-themed setting and a compelling environment for humans, or not?
I like your setting where whatever weird world we're exploring just happens to have dinosaurs, and we have like a little research station or something, a foothold, a beachhead, if you will, and the rest of the world is all dinosaurs.
Oh, so we have... So somewhat analogous to what you mentioned earlier, the movie Avatar, where humans are trying to establish a presence on this already populated and very hostile planet.
I'll go back to something you said again earlier, like not necessarily hostile, just, you know, don't get in the way of hungry dinosaurs.
Okay, so they're just animals, you know, doing their thing. And so as the story unfolds, the humans may suffer mishaps at the hands or claws or teeth of dinosaurs, but not because the dinosaurs are malicious, but because they're just wild animals and they see a prey item and they act.
That's what a tiger does.
Yeah, I like it. It would kind of harken back to sort of a Europe that was full of wolves, and you didn't want to wander into the woods because the wolves would get you, you know what I mean? Except these wolves are a lot larger and more hungry and dangerous. That's cool. I mean, I don't know, you know, we could probably flesh out more the actual motivations for the people being there, but I really like this notion of this tiny, perilously balanced outpost, like just on the verge of this like dinosaur-infested frontier. And infested's judgmental. Of course, the dinosaurs are just trying to live. But then, of course, something compels us to go there. As you mentioned earlier, drawing a parallel to Avatar, like an unobtainium type of thing that we need to go get.
We'll call it Valium. Valium.
Right, we must find the Valium, which means we have to go into dinosaur territory. Now, how do you feel about, let's say we're exploring another planet, right? Is that the kind of the premise here? We found another world where the dinosaurs still rule, or?
Well, we could go Stargate and say it's alternate dimension.
Okay, so we're conceding that you need the sci-fi bridge to get humans into a dinosaur setting, but okay, we go alternate dimension where maybe dinosaurs never really, where dinosaurs never really died out on Earth. So we go to an alternate Earth, and the dinosaurs have had all this time to evolve. So now in addition to the dinosaurs, maybe what? There's a little more sophisticated, a little bit smarter dinosaur running around that's a particular danger? I'm not saying they became human, but who knows? They become even a more efficient predator.
I would feel terrible if I didn't point out the similarities between this and the Super Mario Brothers movie.
Wait, what?
Mario found a portal to an alternate dimension in a pipe, and his motivation to venture into the super evolved lizard's area was rescuing Princess from the Bowser.
Oh, man. So you're telling me we can't really do any treatment of Mankind Intrudes on the land of hyper-evolved dinosaurs without retreading Mario Brothers, the movie?
We just gotta walk that line.
See, I was gonna go more down the lines of, you know, maybe some of the dinosaurs had developed a sort of cunning or intelligence, but really what you had was even more efficient killing machines than we saw in like Jurassic Park or something like that. And,
right.
You know, the dinosaurs had evolved and
they learned WCW moves.
They became a lot more clever in their hunting techniques, let's just say. I don't know, but you could do a lot with that. If you basically had modern-day Earth overlaid onto modern-day Earth in a parallel dimension where nothing bad befell the dinosaurs and they were still around today, it's interesting to consider. You know, I don't have the scientific training to really ponder what would have happened, but you know, there were a lot of sort of unique evolutionary pressures that caused us to develop our big brains. Absent those pressures, what would have happened to the dinosaurs? Or would those pressures have come about as a result of ice ages and that kind of thing, you know? Or would ice ages have come about absent a big meteor impact? You know, there's just so many questions. But I think we can make some pretty cool fiction out of this.
I think we're off to a good start.
I agree. So, really quick, let's bang out a list of protagonists and then call it a show. So, main character, hit me.
He's got to be like a not a hard science major. He's got to be like just graduated from an art school or something. And he got drafted somehow for the expedition.
Okay. The art student got drafted. He signed up for like a summer job to work for this like hard scrabble paleontologist like research project, and she is this PhD in like 8 different sciences, and she really can't stand this like mush brained art student. But it turns out that he becomes a real asset as they.
His abstract thinking.
Right. You're thinking about the dinosaurs as animals. I'm thinking about them as expressions of nature. And she like, it's like eye rolling inducing at first. But it turns out he has unique viewpoints that the very analytical paleontologist and her crew of grad students didn't have. I like it. We're going to need like a love interest. So are we going to have like another teenage couple that tags along? Is it the student and the teacher? You know, that's a must.
Well, it has to be love triangle. So student and teacher, I'm really tempted to throw in the loincloth wearing Cro-Magnon huntress.
That's immediately what I thought of. Well, of course they have to find like primitive, like humans there. Right. Wow, we can't avoid the tropes ourselves and just trying to like spitball a story. So Raquel Welch comes walking out from behind a tree, and now you've got a love triangle between the paleontologist professor and the young art student and Raquel Welch, right? I like where we're going. Okay, so comic relief, what, a kid, a cute little dinosaur turtle creature, both?
The ultra tech like robot lab assistant.
Bot 2007 or whatever, right? I am Bot 3000. Now, does Bot 3000 learn to become human with the assistance of a kid that somehow winds up in the mix? I like a kid being in the show for some reason.
How do we get a kid? I don't know.
Maybe the cave woman has a kid, or maybe they encounter.
Oh, she's a single mother cave woman. She's not a huntress. She's just moonlighting.
Oh, that's really great. So the single mother cave woman, like, okay, so she's really attractive. She's a cave woman, and the paleontologist with her 15 degrees and everything can't understand why she has to compete. Like, it's really frustrating. Like, look, I literally have 15 degrees. I'm, like, super accomplished, and I am competing with a woman whose vocabulary consists of Ugga and Bugga. That makes for, like, a really good, like, like a tug of war. Because as we know, that's just, like, things work in the real world, right? You know, the lowlife seem to be the most attractive to people, right?
Yeah.
Oh, wow, that can make... So, see, look what we've done. We started off in a world full of dinosaurs and dinosaurian threat and mayhem, and we've made something very focused on the people, and that's what makes for a good show, right? It's not about the dinosaurs. It's about the people.
It's about the relationships, the natural expressions of nature.
All right, we'll call the show Expedition Dino. And, of course, a team of mercenaries is going to have to make their way through the time portal or however we get to this planet.
Space pirates.
Right, to like to either find the rare mineral that the people are looking for or to like get dinosaur ivory or something bad.
Triceratop horns.
Right. Something horrible, like space poachers or something show up. Right, so then the humans' internal bickering ceases, and then they focus on their common enemy. And then, of course, they find the intelligent reptilian creatures at some point, because, you know, that's a must. We really have to cover everything. We can't just do our own thing here.
That'll be like a season three cliffhanger. The space pirates will have the upper hand, and then the intelligent Saurians will come and save the...
I like it. I like it. They'll come in and ally with the humans. And then the show got canceled, and for the next 15 years, fans, like, what do you call it, has brown shirts?
Brown coats.
Yeah, the brown coats, right? Not brown shirts. That's Nazis. But, like, we'll have our own brown coats called, like, scale faces or something, and they'll lobby for the show to be brought back for, like, 15 years. And then it'll be brought back, and it won't be that good. Scale faces? I like that one. Scale heads? Dino heads? Boneheads. They're just boneheads.
Boneheads.
It's a show about paleontology. And people cosplay paleontologists with their little paleontologist hats and their khaki shorts. It'll be awesome. All right. Let's get that script together for the pilot and make this thing happen. Nerdtravaganza Studios presents Expedition Dino. Look for it in 2015 or never. Probably never. Cool. So I think we have validated prehistory as a setting for fiction. We've demonstrated its validity by coming up with our own awesome fictional concept. And now I think it's time to wrap up the show. So I will encourage you, listeners, if you enjoyed tonight's episode, to use the very modern day and in no way Stone Age tools at your disposal, such as iTunes or whatever podcatching software you happen to like, and subscribe to our show, rate us favorably, write us a good review, etc. Check us out on our website, nerdstravaganza.com, and feel free to drop us a line at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Or if you're into the social media side of things, like us on Facebook, follow us on Twitter and Instagram, plus one us on Google+, and don't forget to join our private Facebook group where we'll be asking for feedback on upcoming episodes of Expedition Dino.
And don't forget to check out Expedition Dino and the show on the awesome streaming solution that Brian is going to announce by way of taking us out in his best dinosaur voice,
Stitcher!